Blake.
I'm Dustin.
And we're bringing you a very special episode of Players Endeavors.
Why is this one special? You say it's special every time, but they're the same thing.
This is The Last of Us in BioShock Infinite special episode.
Why is it special?
It's special because we're here, and we're talking about those two games. And this is episode 4, by the way.
Episode 4.
Yeah. And we're going to start trying to actually get these episodes out on a more regular basis. Probably
weekly.
Once a week.
Weekly is the goal. And we were on vacation for 2 weeks, so...
Yeah.
Because all of you listeners really were missing us, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. We
all
know
100,000 of you.
Well, when they go back through the back catalog and they're like, oh, wow, this was a major time leap. We now are explaining the time leap. Because, I mean, this is like... Podcasts are like Netflix. You start at the beginning.
And you work your way
you
back.
You work your way back. Or forward.
That's not how I do that, but okay.
Oh.
I started... I'll like listen to like 4 and then I'll go all the way back.
Oh. Huh.
From the beginning.
Huh.
See the origins.
Wow. Yeah.
Sometimes they're too terrible and I don't do that then.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, we're going to start off with our favorite segment.
It's your favorite segment. It's not my favorite segment.
Dustin's favorite segment.
Okay.
Nice. What we've been playing. And we have a little twist this week.
One twist?
Because Dustin and I have been playing some games on a little old system known as the Magnavox Odyssey 2.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Which is funny, because I own the Magnavox Odyssey 2.
Yeah, we were playing it last night. So I'm gonna let Dustin start first, since it's our tradition.
Oh.
You didn't know that that's our tradition.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Oh, wow. Well, I think you've started first every time. I
probably have.
So why don't you kick things off in this exemplifying segment of how this is an amazing podcast.
Okay. So, I have not been playing as much as I should have been, given that I had, like, a week vacation. But, as Blake did say, I have been playing Magnavox Odyssey. I finally dragged it up to RIT.
But see, that's so funny, though. Like, I've been playing the Magnavox Odyssey. Like,
it is.
Who does that?
I do.
We do.
Well, you do now, yeah. I finally dragged it up here to RIT to let the guys try it out, and we've been playing some of the classics on that. It was pretty fun.
Anyone looking for new Odyssey games to play, I would recommend Casey Munchkin.
Casey Munchkin, Pickaxe Pete.
Alien Invaders Plus.
Alien Invaders Plus.
No,
don't get Blackjack,
don't get Blackjack.
Or the slot machine.
Or the slot machine. But but get a quest for whatever the game is. Quest for Dragon Keep.
I don't know what it's called. I don't remember. But it's, like, it comes in a box, and it has a Game Boy. It's like, I don't even know. It's ridiculous.
We need to play
the instruction manual is printed in, like, gold leaf. It's really cool.
We should go through and explain what each game is.
No.
Because all of them are essentially...
That'll take too long.
Well, it'll be really quick. I'll do it. So, essentially, all these games are copyright infringement. In fact, Casey Munchkin is a Pac-Man clone, and Atari sued them and won after it came out. So Casey Munchkin is a Pac-Man clone where you can, where the mazes, you can first construct the mazes, and then also there's different maze modes, like, as the Pac-Man creature, whose name I think is Casey Munchkin, moves, then the maze disappears.
That is his name.
And then, really, you're just eating these power pellets, but the power pellets move in this one.
They're not all power pellets.
And they're not all, right? They're pellets.
The power pellet's the one that lets you eat the ghosts.
Yeah, and you can eat the creatures in this one, too.
You can eat them.
And the game is, it's pretty fun.
It's better than Pac-Man, in my opinion. And others agree with me.
But there's been no sequel, because they were sued. And other reasons, probably. The next game was Alien Invaders Plus. It's kind of like Space Invaders, but...
Harder.
A lot harder. You have these robots who are, who have turrets and are defended by shields, and you have to shoot them at the right time, but then they also shoot you, so, and you have your own shields, but they can destroy the shields. And it's kind of like a round-based game where if you defeat them all, then you get to,
You get a
point.
That's it.
And you want to have
a point.
Yeah, and you want to have more points than the enemy, really. But it's really, like, there's no end point, I don't think.
I don't believe there is.
And then Pickaxe Pete is... It seems like it was based off of Donkey Kong, but it's really weird.
It doesn't really make sense.
You get a pickaxe, and you can use the pickaxe, and then the pickaxe goes out eventually, and you're running up and down these levels on ladders to get a key. When you get the key, you have to go through the door, and then this crazy seizure animation plays, and you go on to the next level, And
then you do it again.
And then you do it again. It's really weird. But yeah, that's what we played yesterday. What else have you been playing, Dustin?
I was gonna go, and then you gave a brief interlude about everything that the Magnavox Odyssey has on it.
The Magnavox Odyssey is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I told you it was cool.
We're gonna get 4.
I have also been playing, sort of playing some NES games, because I finally brought them up from my house and was testing them all out. I'm mostly excited to play Final Fantasy 1 on the NES as it's meant to be played, as opposed to playing it on the Game Boy Advance, so that hopefully I'll have time to, put towards that. I've been playing a lot of Payday the Heist lately, with our new roommate, Matt. It's a really fun, it's like Left 4 Dead, but for a cops and robbers kind of deal. You only play as the robbers, but you're pretty much pulling off all these heists with different sorts of mission-specific objectives. And you get attacked by police officers, and you have to, stay alive and steal stuff. And it's very fun. It's a good co-op shooter that I'm really enjoying right now. Other than that, I played a bunch of Racketeer when I was helping my sister move into college. I really liked that game.
While you were helping her move in?
Yeah. While my parents were watching her decorate her room.
Oh, okay.
I was sitting out in the lounge playing Racketeer. That game is... I like that game a lot. Pretty much you get to run an item shop and then also go questing for more items.
And it's all, anime chibi.
It's very anime-styled. The voice acting is in Japanese, but with English text. But I don't think it was made in Japan.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
No, it was.
Was it? Okay.
I'm pretty sure because the company that localizes it also publishes it here.
Oh,
and
okay.
They have other games.
That makes sense.
Well, one of the other games... I think Chantelise was made by the same people.
It is.
There's another game that was developed by them, and they were, pitching it as their new game, but it had nothing to do with the other one.
Oh, okay.
I could be totally wrong, but I don't think I am.
Anyway, that game is really cool. I really like it. It's very quick to just pick up and play. Running an item shop is a lot of fun. I don't know, I think it's a really fun, quick diversionary type game that goes on for a long time. I put 2 hours into it at least, and, it's pretty... I don't know, it gets crazy. But it's really fun.
Carpe Folger is the name of the company that localizes it, by the way.
Other than that, I didn't bring my Xbox home with me on break, so I really didn't get to... I didn't play any Xbox games. I was mostly playing PC stuff until I got back up here. I think that's pretty much it for me. For now.
For me, I beat Legend of Zelda Oracle of Seasons over break.
You can tell me that.
Yeah, I beat Oracle of Seasons. Really, really fun Zelda game. It's almost like Link's Awakening 2.
Oracle of Ages is better.
I don't know. I haven't played Oracle of Ages.
I haven't.
But Oracle of Seasons is... I played Oracle of Seasons on my 3DS, and it was just... It was a really fun time. The final boss is a real bitch, because...
Oh.
unnecessary. You have to go through... three giant rooms full of enemies. I mean, and eventually I got good enough that I would take no damage fighting them all. And then you have to go fight the first form of the boss, and then the second form of the boss, and then you had to go to bullshit platforming mode and fight the third form of the boss,
which is super
difficult.
I thought you loved
platforming. Yeah, I don't like platforming in a top-down isometric action game where the platforming feels like Zelda 2 with a little more polish.
Zelda 2 doesn't have platforming.
I think the most annoying thing in Link to the... Zelda 2 does.
Does it?
It might not.
It's side-scrolling.
Yeah, and they also have, jumping segments.
Do they really?
You know, Link's Awakening platforming?
I only ever got, 2 minutes into that game.
Into
Link's
Awakening?
No, I,
Zelda 2.
Almost beat Link's Awakening.
Yeah, Link's Awakening.
Zelda 2,
imagine, the platforming areas of Link's Awakening, but you have to fight a boss. It's the hardest boss in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really not.
It's easy.
No, it's not. It took me a long time.
I feel like you're not good at platforming, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, okay, whatever. You can go, use that hammer you're playing with and bash your skull.
There's a great quote that would fit really well here that I'm not going to use.
And my hammer is my... So anyways...
You beat that.
I beat that, and then I was like, well, Link Between Worlds is coming out, and believe it or not, I've never beaten a Link to the Past.
I didn't believe it. I don't know how you got away with
so
that. Like, I haven't played all the Zeldas, and I beat that
and
one.
So I've been playing through A Link to the Past on the Game Boy Advance, and I've been having a phenomenal time doing it. It's
so
a
fun.
Really, really cool game. It's really weird. Like, I love the transition from Zelda 2 to A Link to the Past. Like, or even, I mean, more, it's more akin to the original Zelda, but that leap is just so instrumental, I feel like. And the really weird thing is, like, Ocarina of Time really feels a lot like Link to the Past. It feels like a 3D Link to the Past, in a lot of ways. And so, it's really cool just thinking about that, and
I love the sprite art in that game.
Oh my! It is one of the most beautiful games. I can't believe
16-bit.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's really, really pretty.
I wish we could play it on the actual SNES.
I can. I mean, I have a SNES.
I bet getting that cart
is
expensive.
Maybe. I have Donkey Kong Country, the original for the SNES. But anyways, I'm divulging.
Divulging? You mean diverging?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Not divulging.
Divulging would be giving out information that was.
I was giving out confidential information. No one was supposed to know I had a SNES.
Too late.
And I also have been playing The Last of Us. I'm getting towards
the end. How do you know you're towards the end? You don't know.
Because I know how long the game is and I know how many hours I put into it.
That does not equate anything.
Okay. So I'm towards the end. And
using averages.
I've also been playing a lot, and what's been taking away from most of my time to play The Last of Us, I've been playing a lot of Saints Row the Third.
Really?
I've now 100%ed.
I was going to say 100 hour, and I was
No. I've played for, I think, like 15 hours total. I'm now 100%ed both of the Morningstar areas, and I'm over 50% on both the Deckers and Luchador areas, and I think I'm also towards the end of the main campaign in that one. I do have all the DLC, so I'm probably going to play through that, but I've almost done all the assassination missions. I've just been having, like, the best time ever with that game, and I've sunk so many, like, I'll be like, I'll just play this for a half hour, and I just lose, like, 2 hours to it.
I've literally not seen him for days because of this game.
No, that's not true. Well,
days.
I have 15 hours in the game. You can't,
days.
It's not Skyrim. I only played Skyrim for 10 hours, though, so.
How did you only... Wow. Like, I played Skyrim for the first night for 10 hours.
Yeah.
The game is addictive.
I don't know.
I still haven't finished that game. It's so long.
Actually, it can be really short if you just rush to the end.
You can't.
Really?
Because the enemies are stupidly powerful.
Oh, okay. Well,
I tried that, because I was like, I don't have a lot of time. I'm going to do the main storyline. Gets sidetracked.
So, that's been...
All of your time.
Something I've been meaning to play. I think that is actually... I was going to play Faster Than Light.
You still
downloaded.
Should. I don't know why you haven't.
I also played... There was another game. Oh, there's this great phone game that has gotten me addicted.
Oh, that one that you said I should play?
Oh my
tower
god.
Defense
it
one?
Is... It's kind of... It's a really weird tower defense. It's really cool.
It's like $8, though.
Yeah, it's totally worth it. It's called...
You've convinced me.
RYMD capsule, spelled KAPSEL, and it is like this. You place all your different, you have a bunch of different resource management systems, and all the resource management systems are going towards you being able to create more people, which allows you to defend more places, and also which allows you to construct more, which allows you to gain more area so you can get to these different areas that have power-ups, and then your entire goal is to be able to survive 28 waves. But you need a lot of people to be able to survive those waves all the way. And so by, like, round 24, if you don't have enough people, you'll just get wiped. And,
wiped out, you mean?
Wiped out. It takes about an hour and a half to get to that point. But it is crazy fun. It's really addicting as well. So I would recommend that. That's what got me thinking about playing Faster Than Light, because I own it, and I've been meaning to play it. And besides that, I don't know if I've been playing anything else. I've been meaning to play more Shin Megami Tensei 4, but I haven't had the time.
I want
to
beat Hitman Absolution soon.
Yeah, so...
And then Slaves.
I'm going to beat The Last of Us by the next podcast. I swear to it.
You've said that
and
every
also
podcast.
I'm going to try to beat Saints Row the Third.
That's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, well... that's because I want to 100% it. And then I want to get Saints Row 4, because it looks really cool. So... Yeah, that's,
I need to play more Revelations.
That's been what I've been playing, and Resident Evil 6.
Oh, I need to play that a lot. Yeah. Because that's a long game. Yeah.
So, I have played enough of The Last of Us, though, to consider three different parts about it in comparison to Bioshock Infinite, which I've beaten.
You say Bioshock Infinite?
I said Infinite.
You said it really fast.
In German, it's Unfinite.
That's offensive to us Germans.
Fuck you guys.
Wow, wow.
And I'm joking.
You're gonna have to bleep this
I love the Germans.
Jeez, like,
so anyways,
really, you're on a ball.
The three things that we want to compare between The Last of Us and Bioshock Infinite is, first off, the AI companion.
Pretty obvious comparison right there. I mean, it's, like, directly,
The second is the world and how the different worlds are. And,
correct, yes.
Dustin's gonna tell us the third.
Oh, am I? You forgot? There was 3 points. Three points. You can't remember the third one. But we were talking about the use of violence is the third one.
That was actually my idea, too.
Yeah, no, I know. That's what was funny.
Okay. And we want to talk about the use of violence.
Between the two of
them. Between the two games.
That's probably gonna be the biggest one, so we'll probably leave that one for last.
I'm not even sure if we agree on it. So this is
gonna
be
really
interesting.
We'll find out. Pretty sure we
do. So... let's start out with the AI companions.
This is probably going to be the most controversial one.
A lot of what spurs this is we went to a PAX
East... A little man named Ken Levine.
Yeah, we went to a PAX East panel, and Ken Levine was all like, oh my god, yeah, Elizabeth, she's fantastic. You'll think she's real, and she interacts with objects in the environment. And
I believe
totally...
at one point he literally said, like, she surprises us to this day. Like,
yeah.
Up until the game comes out with what she'll do. And we were like, whoa!
And I think
that's
that
awesome.
we were on our way to GDC, so we might have been in the mindset of, oh, this isn't just media shit. This is...
Stuff.
This isn't just media stuff.
We're not that podcast.
This is actually, like, legitimate, like, I don't know, a talk at GDC, which... it gives you the honest truth, unless it's a sponsored talk, of...
they never lie in those. Intel Ultrabooks are more powerful than anything on the market.
Uh-huh. And so, I guess we didn't really think about it as propaganda to buy the game. But anyways, Ken Levine was saying all this stuff. They had the voice
actors
up there.
We trusted Ken Levine.
And so Bioshock Infinite comes around, and I'm playing through it.
I also played through it, I should point that out.
Yeah, and we actually beat it. He beat it, like, 10 seconds before me.
I'm really proud
like,
of that.
Like, literally, like, 10 seconds.
Really proud of that fact.
And... so then we talked about that after. But anyways, so...
we're talking about Elizabeth.
I know. I was trying to gather my thoughts.
Okay.
So, essentially, Elizabeth, in that game, in terms of...
is your AI companion.
She's your AI companion. She helps the main character, Booker, and your entire goal really centers around her... and trying to free her and bring her back so that he can pay away his debt. Which is the entire plot. And we're not gonna spoil anything for you.
No, we're just gonna talk about her as a like an AI companion, not about her story, really.
So
Because as a story character, I think Elizabeth works really well.
She's well-done story character.
Yeah, she's very interesting, like, in her cutscenes, like, her motivations and her, like, the person that she is all very interesting.
The way she's been brought up and... like, even her finger with the wound on it is kind of cool, because she's not, like, a perfect person.
Right.
But there's... most of the game is gameplay. And
right.
As in terms of a gameplay character, she's very non-realistic acting, I'd have to say.
I agree.
One of the things she does is she doesn't respond... to your movement, or she often would stare, like, especially in an elevator or something, she would just stare. And there were points in the game where she'd be, like, playing around in some area or looking at something, and I'd be like... And I was immersed, and, like, I was fully ingrained in, like, the world and thinking, oh, there's Elizabeth doing whatever Elizabeth does. But more often than not, it was, why is she acting this way, or stop giving me money.
She does have a tendency to fixate on objects. Like, it's part of her AI behavior to, like, examine things in the environment if it's clear that you're, like, searching around. But it never felt, to me at least, very natural. Like, at first it was kind of like, oh, that's cool, she's looking at that, like, fruit cart, that's cool. But then, like, after you see her looking at something and then you'll look at the same thing in a different place and give the same line again, it was a lot less interesting, because I was like, wow, okay, this is becoming less about her immersion and more about she's clearly randomly picking spots to go to.
Also, while you were looking around, she would often just run off. And
go look at something random.
Or just go to the next point. Because they really used her as a catalyst for you to figure out where your next destination was.
And she does always throw you stuff.
Uh-huh.
Which is cool if you're in battle and you're out of ammo and then she throws you, like, a gun. I thought that was cool. But sometimes she'll just, like, also in the middle of a battle be like, hey, Booker, money! And you're like, what? And then she throws this coin at you and you're just like, I'm dying. Why?
And you also reach a point in the game where one coin is so insignificant.
I thought that the money did scale, though. Like, I thought the money she threw you was more.
Did it?
I thought it was, okay. At least marginally.
Okay.
It wasn't like you got 100, but I think it was like you got 30 as opposed to
3. But it was like, well, if I'm in the middle of this, or it'd be like a really intense moment, too. Like, there's this one part of the game where there's like a stairwell, and it's right before this alley where there's a bunch of snipers or whatever, and you're really exploring a lot, but you're on the run, and so it's really high emotion, and when she's just throwing you coins, and all of a sudden someone pops out of nowhere, it's like, Elizabeth, what the are you doing? Just fight or run. And the other thing that's really de-immersive is that she doesn't take damage.
Or react to anything. The battle.
Like, once battles start, she just kind of runs around and looks for ammo while everyone's shooting past her.
She seems to, like, try and take cover or something. Like, I don't know. I never noticed her, like, cowering in fear or, like,
she follows you a lot.
Yeah, but she doesn't react. Like, does she even duck when you aim at her? I'm not sure if she does.
I think she gets pissed sometimes where she's like, what are you doing? But
I hope she does that, at least. I don't even... That's really sad that, like, I don't remember if she does that.
Something that really threw me off, and I mean, I don't think I've experienced this in The Last of Us, but there's, like, a lot of elevator segments that transition between areas in Bioshock Infinite, and so...
Sneaky loading screens, yeah, is what we'll call those.
So I would look at her. Like, they were long enough that I could, like, look at her, and we'd be talking or something, and I'd look at her to talk to her, and she just wouldn't... She wouldn't do anything. She would just keep looking forward. And that usually just killed it for me. And I know that would have been more difficult, but just due to the fact that we were in that constrained space, and that was such a natural motion to, like, look at who I'm talking to.
Because you don't have anything else to do, except mm-hmm. maybe look out the window.
Which, in The Last of Us, the way they fixed that, actually, is, since it's third person, your character is always looking at who they're talking to. So I guess we can transition a little bit into The Last of Us now.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much our rant on Bioshock Infinite's AI.
So we weren't too impressed with Bioshock Infinite.
I mean, she was a fine companion, and I will give them credit that I don't think there was ever a point, except for when she would throw me money awkwardly, where I was like, Elizabeth is actually making this game harder, or yeah. I feel like yeah. she is a burden.
She never made it a burden.
Which is important, because mm-hmm. that's definitely a hurdle to overcome. So, I mean, props to them for
Ashley
that.
Ashley in Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, exactly. Like, props to that. Well, but Ashley, that was a good mechanic.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Well, I meant in terms of a burden. Like,
we'll talk about that later. But, yes, I think that they did a good job making it so Elizabeth was not something that you were, like, constantly losing because of. That mm-hmm. was well done.
Mm-hmm. You weren't, it wasn't annoyed.
Yeah. But The Last of Us...
The Last of Us, you play as, Nolan North. You play as
Nolan North.
You play as Joel, who's this, like, older man, probably mid-50s, I'd say.
What? He's 40, not that 40s old. Or 50s. He's in his late 30s, early 40s,
really?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
He's, like, jumping over, like,
yeah,
crazy
okay,
stuff.
Yeah, fine. So I got his age a little
I feel like
wrong.
He's, like, Nathan Drake age, but a little older. Also, yeah. He's in the apocalypse. Everybody looks
yeah,
older
he's
in
the apocalypse.
The apocalypse.
And you're running around with, like, a, what, 14-year-old girl named Ellie?
Mm-hmm. I think she's close to that, yeah.
Also known as Ellen Page.
Indeed.
She looks a lot like Ellen Page.
She is not Ellen Page.
But she's not
Nor
Ellen
is she
Page.
Ellen
Page is in Beyond Two Souls.
That's right.
Which I'm really excited for. But
yes.
We'll probably have, like, an entire podcast on that game. So...
Two podcasts.
In terms of,
And you're trying to... It's very similar to Bioshock Infinite in that you're trying to guide her to some place because she is really... the catalyst for the story. Once again, we're not going to spoil anything, but I mean, you are taking her on a journey across the country to take her places.
And it's a little bit in yourself. It starts out with it being within your self-interest, but very early on, you can tell that the main character is starting to care for her.
Right. There's definitely an attachment set up through the story.
So that's and that also happens in BioShock Infinite.
Booker, not to the same extent.
I
guess it's a different kind of relationship too. Because I mean, it's almost like a father-daughter relationship with The Last of Us, whereas in BioShock Infinite, it's more of a mutual like love, sort of, but more like mutual.
We're helping
friends,
each other out.
Protector type relationship, mm-hmm. which is interesting.
Yeah.
So once again, like story wise, Ellie was really a great character. Like she was fantastic.
And I think the other thing with her, and this is a lot of the stuff that she did was also looking around the areas. But you never, at least for me, I never felt like she was ever running off too much. And I always felt like
if anything, she didn't run enough.
No,
sometimes I'd have to wait for her. But then I was like, but she has smaller legs.
Yeah,
and is younger. So that actually makes a lot of
sense.
And
you get to watch her climb down and stuff, and you're waiting for her, and you're wanting her to catch up. And, I mean,
it fosters a very caring relationship through gameplay, which mm-hmm. is surprising. Because she's not leading you by the hand, and you don't have to lead her by the hand, but you just, like, naturally feel as though you have to wait up for her. Especially when they use conversation to keep you together
with
her.
Yeah, I was about to say that, because there's this comic book she's always looking for. And if you find a comic book, you get to be like, oh, here, I found a comic book for you. And that always just really, like, sticks out to me, because it's like, you reach this, because you really are starting to, like, I guess, care about each other. And they really, through gameplay and story, just build this connection up. And then when you two interact a lot. And while you're walking along, she talks to you a lot more about more important things. In BioShock Infinite, a lot of it always felt like small talk, I guess. Well, in The Last of Us, you're usually talking about like your background or what was the world like before this. And
because she is coming from she was born into the mm-hmm. apocalypse in this world, so she doesn't know anything about the previous like world that we live in.
She also helps you fight some towards the later part of the game, which is a bit of a spoiler. But
she is good in combat.
You kind of actually know that that's happening.
You can tell from the cover.
That's what I was about to say. You can tell from the cover because she's holding
on. She has a rifle.
So
once again, she's not ever a burden in combat.
No.
She feels so much more connected to you.
She doesn't do anything super annoying, though, either, that makes you feel like she's an AI. Like, I know she's an AI, and it's not like totally like, I don't feel like...
She's not a perfect sim,
yeah,
for sure.
But she's one of the... I think she's probably the best companion in a game that I...
Fallout 3 had some really good companions.
Play Fallout 3.
Should play Fallout 3. I really like that... oh, crap, I had something to say, and I don't remember what it was about Ellie being an awesome AI companion, because...
There's other... Well, one of the things I think is really cool is that she can't swim.
Yeah, I remember now.
And you have to... You actually have to, in those situations, go out of your way to do something for her, but it's not like you ever are, like, angry about it or frustrated. It's always...
You just want to help her.
You just want to help, and...
The thing I was going to say is that in combat, she's a lot more... She reacts a lot more than Elizabeth ever did.
Yeah.
Like, she's very vocal.
She curses.
She curses, she yells, she cries out for you, like, she gets scared, she gets nervous, like... It's very clear that, I don't know, I felt much more connected to her even as just, like, her being around me because she was more reactive
to
things.
It feels like you're going through it with her together rather than BioShock Infinite, where it feels like you're just taking out these guys so that Elizabeth can get to the next checkpoint.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot more connectedness between the two of you.
Yeah, so, I mean, we both really, really liked the AI and Last of Us. And
I think The Last of Us AI is really, like, it's a step in the really right direction for, like, what you can do with AI that you can't, like, that you can't replicate with another human player.
Mm-hmm.
Which really speaks mm-hmm. volumes, I think, for the value of a single-player game with compelling AI can be, like, very, very cool if it's done right. Like, I mean, because a lot of people tend to say that, you know, oh, the single player game is dead, and you know, oh, you know, multiplayer is the future. But you can't. The things that you can do with the AI, if you script it well, is make it be a really excellent companion that does what you need in terms of the story. Because that's the big downfall of having a human player there, is you can't control their actions, so you don't guarantee that the story points will be hit.
Or you do something really weird, like in Left 4 Dead, where you have the players and the players are communicating, but on another level, their characters are also communicating.
Right.
But I think that really makes
you... In terms
you,
of world play, yeah, it's very de-immersive.
But, yeah, it's really de-immersive, and it makes you feel like you're almost watching a group of characters and, like, helping them more than being the characters.
Yeah, so I think that this was a great, like, look at the future of what I'm hoping single-player games will, like, get to, where you have this AI that you're very connected to, that you feel is at least plausibly, you know, there, and just, like, I don't know, I think it adds a lot to a different kind of experience, and I think it shows that the single-player experience is certainly not dead, and, you know, if done properly, can be just brilliant.
And, I mean, I don't think we're trying to say anything, like, I mean, because Journey also, within the last year, showed us not AI, but the having a companion in a game, and a very powerful experience of having another companion there.
Right.
And I think, we're not, I don't think we're trying to say, like, single-player AI will always be better than a companion.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that at all.
But that single-player games can definitely present a very different experience than...
just, like, story-wise, mm-hmm. I feel like you can't pull some things off with a human player there. Like, you just need an AI that can do the things you need it to do to get your story where you want it to be. And having a more realistic AI that actually is a huge benefit to that, you know, it can make it even more of an awesome experience.
So the next topic we want to talk about is the comparing the worlds. And this one isn't as much of a what one did right and what one did wrong, but more of just a overview of, like, how the worlds were and what made them really interesting worlds.
Because both of them are, like, pretty fantastic worlds to explore. I mean,
mm-hmm.
They're both
in very
awesome.
Different ways.
Yeah.
One is very... The interesting thing about Bioshock Infinite's world... Bioshock Infinite takes place in a sky city called...
Fictional sky
city. Fictional sky city. Not a actual sky
you
city.
You could argue that the ISS is a sky city.
Okay. Yeah, you could argue that.
I'm just clarifying.
And the name of the sky city is escaping me.
Really? You can't?
Oh my god.
I'm not even going to tell you what it is.
Columbia.
This is
it's Columbia. It's Columbia.
Oh man, that was awesome.
It's this world called Columbia, and there's the entire idea behind the city is it's America's America. This city seceded from the U.S. and went to the sky and has
to be more American,
than America. And it really, it's almost a glorified version of puritanical ideals.
With capitalism.
With capitalism.
Like pure capitalism.
Very, yeah.
Like
and,
hardcore, pure, unadulterated, like, monopoly-style capitalism.
With workers who can never work their way up and who... the government makes sure does not escape.
And huge monopolies.
And huge monopolies, like... And
the main manufacturer manufactures, like, 90% of all goods. He is the monopoly.
And so the entire world is you're exploring this giant sky city, and you're exploring both the upper echelon.
Echelon. What is wrong with you?
I always thought that's how you said it.
Echelon? Yeah, that sounds gross. No,
echelon.
Upper echelon.
Fine. My B.
Did you ever play Splinter Cell?
No.
Third Echelon? That's the name of their group.
I played, like, the first, like, level.
Oh, God. Okay, then. Well, that's on your list now.
And the lower Echelon.
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 I'm putting the emphasis all wrong. I still don't use that word anymore.
Echelon.
Just talking about the upper class and lower class.
So, yeah. So, the upper class is really, like, the religious government leader. The interesting thing about it, to Bioshock Infinite, though, is there's no democracy.
It's not a democracy.
No, it's a dictatorship. It's America's America if America was run by a religious, puritanical leader that was all for capitalism.
They claim it's a democracy, though?
They might claim it's a democracy, because I think they keep voting Comstock into power.
That might be a spoiler.
There's a guy named Comstock.
You don't know that for the first, like,
5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, okay. Sorry for spoiling everything. We spoiled more than The Last of Us.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she has a rifle.
That's on the cover.
Yeah, and Comstock's somewhere.
He is. You are correct. So
you get to explore this America's beautiful America. Area. There's this railway system that connects everything.
It's a sky railway,
and you get to, like, you have this gear thing, slide thing, that allows you to slide out along it, and it's really awesome, and the levels are really, like beautiful, and it's very different mechanics, really. All the jumping around you do, and landing.
It's a very fantastical world, mm-hmm. too. It's much more fantastical than
Bioshock
or Bioshock 2, because those, I mean, they're obviously in the same place in Rapture, Under the Sea, but they were both very, like, this is a semi-plausible kind of thing. I mean, it was like, this is not reality, but it's plausible enough that it could be. Whereas Bioshock Infinite, at least in my opinion, you may disagree with this, is just very fantastical. Like, that it doesn't try and ground itself as much at all. It's much more like, let's take this technology tree in a totally different direction, like... We're inventing a lot of things that don't exist.
They do invent a lot of things, but they do ground it somewhere.
They ground it in the world of Bioshock.
Not in the world of us. And the Lucille twins.
Yes, that's also Lucille very fantastical, twins. I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's very magical.
The entire quantum.
I mean, they do try and rationalize it, but I never felt like this world is plausible. Whereas, just to contrast this, because why I brought this up, is because one of the things I love about The Last of Us so much is they do so much work to make a very plausible world.
Oh my god.
Because that's one of the things that Bioshock 1 and 2 I thought did really well, is they captured a very theoretically plausible world in that time period.
Yeah, they took an Onrandian society as it would be in essentially Cold War era.
Isn't it Onrandian?
I'm pretty sure it's Onrand, but whatever.
Please comment if you know. I want the answer to that.
There's really objectivist world, which essentially is what Bioshock was. And they let you view it and view what it was like. And then in The Last of Us, what you get is a post-apocalyptic America. Of everything is kind of... most society's fallen apart, but the government's still trying to keep things together. But there's a lot of groups that are really just trying to stay underground and break the law so they can survive.
It's a really excellent look at a post-cataclysm, like, society, in my opinion. Very realistic look, I think, too. Very, Walking Dead-esque in how it presents, its plausible scenario. Because, I mean... The scenario they've chosen, which I won't spoil, is very interesting. I like it a lot, but it would work for a large number of cataclysmic events, which I think is very wise, because it allows you to kind of look at the societal changes as a whole and not be focused on the specifics of the cataclysmic event as much.
And they really break down they break down American society a lot.
Well, then they break down even the event really well, which was one of my favorite things, is just how they show the event unfolding from inception to catastrophe to post-catastrophe, which most games just throw you right in at post-catastrophe, like after everything's bad and has been bad for a while. It's a very common thing. You know, you start out Fallout 3 and the world has been destroyed for a while. Like, you're not watching it be destroyed. But in this game, you get to see the unfolding, which I think is the part that is one of the most interesting parts, in my opinion. Because it's so visceral and, I don't know, it's very real.
Yeah,
it's
very
to watch, like, what people would probably do in this circumstance.
Which really leads up to the violence point. But one thing, yes. I looked it up.
Oh.
You pronounce up? Her name Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
Ayn.
Yeah, it rhymes with mine. And
Ayn Rand.
Yeah, I think it's Rand. It's...
Ayn Rand. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm alright with that.
Yeah.
As long as it's not on Rand. I thought that was dumb. Ayn Rand works for me.
Yeah.
Or Anne. Yeah, Ayn Anne. Okay. I'm good with that.
She was also Jewish, which I didn't know.
Yes, she was.
Which explains why Ken Levine would want to make a game about her.
Why are we making enemies with Ken Levine?
No.
Why do we have to make enemies with Ken Levine?
Well, Ken Levine didn't like Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand.
What a hard name to say. Anyway, so...
because he wanted to rhyme, and it doesn't.
Going back to that segue...
Oh, yeah. Are we trying to talk about worlds? I guess we are.
Yeah. Now let's transition into...
violence.
The way they convey violence. So, one of the largest critiques of Bioshock Infinite is...
At least that you have. I don't think this was a... Was this a global critique?
There were a lot of different people that were... I saw some... I think I saw an article in Gamasutra.
An article in Gamasutra. Well, that's the entire
industry, and some other
sure.
reviews. And I think Dave Simpkins might have said it.
Who's Dave Simpkins,
professor, renowned professor at RIT. World-renowned. Leader.
God.
Leader of the next generation.
I feel like our podcast is 90% exposition, 10% boring opinions.
Yeah. So anyways,
at least we're honest with you.
So, the Bioshock Infinite is too violent.
What? How can something be too violent,
Blake? The first act of aggression in the game is you...
We should maybe preface this with spoilers.
Spoilers!
We may spoil something.
Yeah, we might spoil some stuff in here.
Accidentally or on purpose. Spoiler alert again.
The first act of aggression when you're in Columbia in Bioshock Infinite is Booker, the main character, has the spinning thing. Or he
it's called the Skyhook.
The Skyhook. He steals a Skyhook, which has a spinny thingy on it.
It's like a bladed, zipline thing. Like, that you would use to zipline around. It has a spinning, like, three-bladed hook that lets you hook on to the skylines.
So he takes that and he basically uses that on Guy's face and just massacres the face down the middle. And it
massacres it down the middle.
I don't know. What the hell? How do you want me to say that?
You could have just said, like, messes up his face.
It messes up his face.
Pretty bad.
Pretty awful.
Think of it like egg beaters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With eggs.
It's really violent.
It is disturbing.
The rest of the game...
I think both of us are pretty... I don't want to say desensitized, but Blake and I both have played our fair share
of very violent games. Things up in Saints Row the Third. Like, oh my god.
And VATS in Fallout 3 is just the coolest thing.
Yeah.
But, like... This was pretty... I don't know. It was very, very violent. But it was never... It came out of nowhere, which was surprising. Because, I mean, you're expecting violence in this game because you know what's coming, I guess. But it comes out of nowhere. It's a complete shock. And it seems very unnecessary, given that he could have not done that thing. Like, he could have just decapitated the guy, or... He had a lot of options, but he chose instead... to do something extraordinarily violent with no thought of recourse or repercussion.
And I mean, there's a little bit of story there, which is that he used to be a soldier, and...
He wasn't a soldier. He worked for the Pinkertons.
He worked for the Pinkertons, and he also
he
fought...
He was shaking people down.
He
was a soldier.
He also fought in the battle...
You're right, I surrender.
The Indian battle.
Right? I surrender. You're correct.
And a lot of what they're trying to do with the plot is show that he was this violent man, and he did violent things, but nothing else in his character shows that level of violence that he expresses there.
Really. No, I think story-wise, I can accept that a violent man would do violent things like this, but in gameplay-wise, at least for me, it was very over the top. I mean, it was shocking, but it wasn't good shocking, I guess. Because you can use shock value to great effect in games, but I didn't think it was... Because
The Last of Us. The first time you meet one of the things that rips your head off, that's pretty scary.
That is pretty scary, but that's different. I was going to say, in Far Cry 3, minor spoilers, when you first get the ability to, like, attack someone, you don't have a weapon, so you, like, do some hand-to-hand combat and, like, stab them with their own knife. And that is, in my opinion, like, a much gentler way to do something very violent without... destroying and mutilating a man's face.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, maybe we're wrong. Maybe you should just do that, and that's okay, but...
But then also, the way that people die in the other way is, like, you can do that trick a lot of times, too. And you can really just screw people up, and...
And there's never any...
Remorse.
There's never any remorse, and it's never done in... But it's never done in fun. It's almost like in the Uncanny Valley. Because in Fallout 3... I mean, if you know anything about Fallout 3's VATS system, you pretty much, like, slow-mo target things on people's bodies, and then you shoot at them, and sometimes, you know, you'll blow their arm off or blow their head into chunks. But it's very... It doesn't feel real. It feels very fake. And then, you know, you can go the opposite direction and have violence in... I don't have a good
Saints
game.
Saints Row the Third is really silly violence.
Well, that's silly. I'm talking about realistic, though. Oh. On the other end of the spectrum, you'd have, like... I'm thinking,
Manhunt
like...
2?
I guess. I was thinking, like... The only thing I think of was, like... I've never played that, so I don't want to use that as an example. But, I was thinking of...
GTA?
GTA 4 has some moments where it's, like... There is extreme violence, but it wasn't... It was shocking, but in, like I said, in the good way, where it felt like it was supposed to make me think about shocking violence. I think, blanking on the name of that thing that I made you play. Spec Ops The Line. Does a great job giving you terrible violence, and that makes you question
There's a moment, spoiler, there's a moment...
Are you spoiling
I'm not gonna spoil it entirely, but I'm just gonna say, there's a moment in that game where you do an action, like, at least for me, I didn't even want to pull the trigger, and I was trying to resist it, but the game won't let you, and when I did it, it was awful, and, but it meant so much, you felt that.
It used the extreme act of violence to make you think about it wasn't just... Random. Like, there's no thinking about it in Bioshock Infinite. Like, you do it, and then you move on. There's no thought, there's no... It's just, I've just destroyed this man's face, let me bring on 100 more. Because that's what... Then you go through and, like, until you find a pistol, like, you just melee the crap out of people. Like, you just go on, like, a blood rage on innocent police officers. Or you burn them alive,
or electrocute them, or whatever else.
I don't know, it's very strange. It's like, at least to me, I feel like it's in an uncanny valley of violence, where it's like... extreme violence with no placement, really. Well, and you can't really choose not to do that.
Yeah.
I mean,
you have to
the
be
only
really
melee you have is the skyhook.
I actually... another example that I felt of this is in Mad World, which is a Wii game.
I haven't played it.
It was the first game that Platinum made, and it's very similar, actually, to Professor Genki's... morally ethical murder arena or whatever in Saints Row the Third, where you're going through this level, you have to fight a bunch of guys and you have to kill them, but Mad World also focuses on you have to kill them in brutal ways and really in different ways, and the only color in the game besides black and white is red for the blood, but it's so overly violent, and it's so overly violent for the sake of violence that I couldn't play the game.
Interesting. I need to play that game.
And I really like Platinum's other games. I've played, like, Bayonetta, and I've played Vanquish, and I'm going to get Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, and I'm going to also forget the
that
wonderful 101. Like, I really like Platinum's other games, but Mad World is just so violent for the sake of violence that I couldn't play, and I feel like it fits right in that area. I think Bioshock Infinite is a lot tamer because you're not, like, picking up people, throwing them to spikes, and then chucking cars at them, and it just, something just is, like, about that, but I think that, I think Bioshock Infinite suffers from the same, like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, I don't know, I don't want to say it was senseless, because, I mean, it was mostly done to protect Elizabeth, but it did feel
beginning, you're really just protecting yourself.
Yeah, I mean, self-defense is cool, I guess, but, I don't know. It's weird.
Compared to The Last of Us. Which, you are also doing extremely violent things. Like, you're smashing people's skulls.
Although you don't, like, do anything on that level.
No,
really.
You don't.
It is definitely a lower level of violence. But the violence is much more...
realistic. I mean, I'm not even sure it's a lower level. You're beating people with crowbars. Or crowbars with spikes that kill them instantly.
Right.
Or
I mean, yeah, it is. But it's not as graphic.
It's not as graphic at all. But on the same note... The Last of Us always puts you in this put you in the sense of I kill or be killed.
That's, yes, it's fight or flight. Like, every fight is difficult. It's never, like, they don't ever give you enough resources to really fight fairly most of the time.
I even think of it as a strategy game a lot.
Because
you really have to,
it's very Resident Evil in that you have to really manage your resources, make every bullet count, and usually in the end you're going to have to fight somebody with a knife.
Yeah, and it's really awesome because of that, and the combat's really cool, and everything feels very strategic.
Well, you always feel like you're losing.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, and that they were able to pull it off without being frustrated.
And running away is such a... I use that tactic a lot. I will kill and then run, because I am not... I cannot survive a large-scale combat.
Stealth is pretty important.
Stealth is really important. Well, in Bioshock Infinite, and I think one of the goals of at least Bioshock 1 was by the end to make you feel all-powerful. By the end of Bioshock 1... I felt like a badass. In Bioshock Infinite, I feel like they also... One of their goals, at least, was to make you feel really powerful. But I think because of that, it made the violence seem overbearing. And there wasn't as gradual of a progression, I didn't think, in Infinite either.
Well, because there wasn't a lot of progression. I mean, there was... the perks and everything were less, like... Didn't you always have the same amount of health? Were there health boosts?
You could get health boosts and vigor.
I agree with you though. I don't remember feeling like I changed much. Mm-hmm. Even as a character, I was just like, I feel like I'm mostly the same guy. Doing the same. I mean, you get new weapons, kind of, but the starting weapons are pretty solid.
There's not as much of a. I mean, Bioshock 1 stems from System Shock 2, and System Shock 2 was, for all intents and purposes, a first-person shooter RPG.
FPS RPG?
And Bioshock was less RPG, but it was still first-person shooter RPG in a lot of senses. It was part, like, horror game RPG, first-person shooter.
Horror game?
It was really creepy at some parts, at least for me.
Oh, yeah, when there was no people, it was pretty creepy.
Yeah, it was real, and it was just the splicers who wanted to kill you all the time.
It was really scary.
Yeah,
that was creepy.
Yeah. Infinite didn't have that really.
No,
Infinite didn't scare me.
It wasn't that scary.
Yeah, one of the questions was at that same panel was, is Infinite going to scare me since it's all in broad daylight? And they were like, yeah, it's going to scare you a little. And there was one point in the game that I got scared, and it was because something like they purposefully, you know, something comes up behind you, and it's one of those like holy crap scares, but you kind of know it's coming
because
it's set
that,
up
yeah.
so well.
There's moments of unease. I mean, I think that they did, at least at some points, do a good job of capitalizing on the, like, you just kind of had that moment where you're like, oh, wait, there's no one here. What? Whoa, that's a little weird. Dead Space 2 does a really great job of that as well.
I need to play through the Dead Space series.
You should do that right now.
So anyways, the violence, though, in The Last of Us just feels like...
It
feels necessary, and then... I mean, you do at points have a non-human enemy, the zombie.
Non-human enemies.
Yeah, and those always feel. I mean, since it's such a monster, you never feel like that bad being stabbed.
Feel pretty good killing.
Yeah, but at the same time, like the clickers, which they just do they can't see you, but they can click and use ultrasound basically to find you. Ultrasonic, rather, to find you. Ultrasounds. They can use ultrasonic hearing to find you. And
echolocation. Echolocation. They're like bats.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. I'm an idiot, if you haven't noticed yet. And
we noticed.
And if they get you,
they
destroy you, and it is scary.
Resident Evil.
And so killing those always just feels like amazing. So yeah. Probably gonna hear background noise, Matt. But I think that's basically our opinions. We did agree a lot on that. But that's not to say we didn't like Bioshock Infinite. I really like Bioshock Infinite still.
No, the story is pretty.
I thought the story was really awesome, and I thought what it said about America, which could be an entirely other episode, is very. I think what both games say about America is very pertinent and thought provoking. I think The Last of Us is just so much of a surprise as well because. It's so vastly different from the Uncharted series or anything else Naughty Dog's really done.
It makes Uncharted look silly.
Yeah,
which
it
is
does.
Amazing.
Because Uncharted's so epic and fun, but like The Last of Us is just like, holy crap, this is the same dev team.
It's definitely a league above.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the capstone on this generation.
Yeah.
Like it's really good.
We might even do an entire podcast about... Well, we want to do a podcast probably next week, if I can get the game finished, about... it was The Last of Us, The Walking Dead, and / Walking Dead 400 Days, and I think there was a third game in there that we discussed. Spec Ops The Line.
That's our mega episode.
They'll probably be like a two-hour long one.
Or something.
Or something. Because those are...
Talk about everything about
those are three
things.
Of our, I think, favorite games in the last year.
For differing reasons, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're all... All of them are awesome.
So, I think that's it for this week.
I think so. I think we're pretty good.
Thank you for listening.
Shout out to,
Shout out to DunhamGaming.com. We're gonna be, hosted through their website soon.
Yay!
And so that's tough coming together. I know PAX Prime is this weekend, so we'll probably hear some cool news announcements.
Keep an eye on our Twitters.
Yeah.
What? I wanted to be like a cool games journalist guy.
Or look at whatever better news syndication you can find.
No, we are the kings of game news. We 24/7.
Go to DunhamGaming.com for all your latest news updates.
That is true.
And, yeah, I guess that's it. Thank you for listening.
Yep.